With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City Newsday. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for turning on the radio this morning. Today is Thursday, September 7th. Coming up in today's show, what's next for NAFTA negotiations? We'll find out. But first, should pollinator health initiatives be included in the next farm bill? Here's Brian German.
Farm bill listening sessions like the one that took place in early August in Modesto continue to be held throughout the United States. One of the speakers at the Modesto session was President of American Beekeeping Federation, Gene Brandy. He addressed the committee on the need to make the health of bees and other pollinators a priority in the upcoming farm bill.
Our winter and annual losses are remaining at very high levels at this time. Bromites, exposure to certain pesticides, inadequate nutrition, and certain diseases continue to take their toll on the nation's honey. Bees. We believe it is important that USDA and all federal agencies embrace the framework of the National Strategy to Promote the Health of Honeybees and Other Pollinators. And we also believe that honeybees need to be specifically mentioned in the Farm Bill as allowed on all USDA conservation program lands. There are opportunities on federal lands that are currently not being utilized, and we'd certainly like to see that explored and expanded.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
U.S., Canadian, and Mexican trade negotiations hope to continue progress on the North American Free Trade Agreement going into the third round of talks later this month. Rod Bain has more.
Round two of North American Free Trade Agreement renegotiations is in the books, concluding Tuesday in Mexico City.
I am pleased to report that we have found mutual agreement on many important issues.
That's U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, joined by counterparts from Mexico and Canada at the second round closing press conference.
By the end of this round, we will have tabled over 24 chapters, and I look forward to continued progress in round three and the ones that follow.
The next round of NAFTA renegotiations takes place later this month in Canada's capital city of Ottawa. And as Mexico's Secretary of the Economy, Ildefonso Guajardo Villarreal, closed the event, he told reporters that Mexican, Canadian, and U.S. officials
have instructed our CN's chief negotiators to really engage in the following weeks in a way in which the momentum of this process can be presented in the third round.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has just put out its new export forecast for this fiscal year and next. Gary Crawford has the information.
Back at this time last year, Agriculture Department analysts were projecting this 2017 fiscal year ag export number would be $133 billion. Throughout this year, they've had to up those numbers.
And we're going to continue to up those again.
And they have. USDA's chief economist Rob Johansson says 3 months ago, the forecast was up to $137 billion. But this latest forecast issued a few days ago is higher, so that
we're almost at $140 billion in exports expected.
Almost $139.8 billion to be exact, which would be up at the same number as back in 2015. Reasons for the improvement?
The fact the dollar was coming down a little bit relative to the extremely high levels we saw in 2016, 2015. But we also know that we had a wonderful harvest last year for most of the major commodities. And South America had a bit of a tough time last year with their previous year crop.
Now, 2017 ag imports into this country also will be higher than expected, a record $116 billion worth, still leaving us with a projected trade surplus of $23.6 billion, biggest since 2015. So analysts also have issued their projections of trade for the 2018 fiscal year that starts October 1st. Again, this year's forecast, 139.8, but for 2018, down to an even $139 billion.
So not a real big drop. I would say at this point, pretty much steady as she goes. No real big changes one way or another.
Some factors supporting exports in the coming year?
We still see the benefits of an improving global economy. The U.S. dollar relative to the Chinese currency is going to be coming down a little bit, which should make us easier to trade more with China. Similarly, our dollar is coming down with respect to some of our competitor currencies, such as Europe's and Australia.
But working against a big increase in export sales, a smaller supply of U.S. crops.
This year's crop being a little bit more normal, not as much of a record as we saw last year.
Also, more competition expected from South America. Now, the largest decline in export value is expected to be in cotton. Sales forecast down $1.3 billion. Hurricane Harvey, though, could take that figure down a little more.
Certainly with the terrible conditions we're seeing in the Texas area right now, we know that the cotton crop down there is going to take a pretty severe hit. So that'll bring down the amount of commodity we have to trade.
But we may see record soybean exports and more exports of horticultural products in 2018. However, take that 2018 trade forecast with a grain of salt, or corn or whatever.
Things can change quite a bit over the space of a year.
They certainly did in 2017. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Continuing our reporting on the National Pork Board with a trade delegation in Southeast Asia. After a visit to Japan, the group will make two stops in China. National Pork Board CEO Bill Evans says China has become a key pork export market.
Yeah, so China with 1.3 billion people, they're the largest hog producer in the world, far and away. Their production systems, while rapidly modernizing, still the lion's share of you know, the run-of-the-mill Chinese pork production is occurring in relatively small scale, or you know, farming that we would argue look pretty similar to what we would have in the United States in the 1950s, for example. But their industry is modernizing, and as their disposable income rapidly increases, meat in their diet also increases with it. So right now, while China has moved into the pork importing market pretty heavily the last few years, we've also found that the European Union has aggressively moved into China, and in that Chinese market increase, U.S. has been able to grab about 20-25% of that, where the European Union and others have grabbed, you know, 70-75% of it.
The pork checkoff depends on others to help open these export markets.
There's different organizations that function in this international marketplace for pork. So you look at the National Pork Producers Council, the industry's trade association. They have been very successful with Nick Giordano, Neil Dirks at the helm there, and really working with the U.S. Trade Representative's office and opening new markets for pork. They've been instrumental in helping negotiate trade deals and lower tariffs on our products internationally. So you kind of look at those are the folks that go in and, you know, open up those markets. And then once the markets are open, that's where the Pork Board and U.S. Meat Export Federation swing into action. With checkoff dollars, this year international marketing is going to be around $8 million of the checkoff is going to move into that space. And our job then is to evaluate the market on the ground, understand the retail consumer cold chain, and then understand how do we start position our pork into those markets. So we work really closely with the packers, the processors, as well as importers and exporters to make sure that that happens.
With back-to-back years of pork production, Evan says these export markets are critically important. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters? Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Ahoy there!
Hi.
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. And now for the Naval Orange Worm Degree Day Report for Pistachio, sponsored by Dow AgriSciences and Intrepid Edge Insecticide. Degree days are determined using the calculator at the UC IPM website. All locations use CMIS weather stations. As of September 3rd, degree day total for Denair, 2,861. That's up 190 in the last 7 days. Merced, 2,815. That's up 186. Firebaugh, 3,139. That's up 195 in the last week. Pinoche, 2,784. That's up 177. Degree days for Tranquility, 3,423. That's up 207. Parlier, 3,376. That's up 202. Degree days for Five Points, 3,563. That's up 206. Coalinga, 3,495, up 220 in the last week. Stratford, 3,392, that's up 203. Delano, 3,242, that's up 199 in the last 7 days. Blackwell's Corner, 3,317, that's up 210. Lost Hills, 3,552, up 212 in the last week. Shafter, 3,360, up 205, and for Arvin, 3,731. That's up 228 in the last week. NOW Degree Day reports are sponsored by Dow AgriSciences and Intrepid Edge Insecticide. This report, as well as past reports, can also be found on our website, agnetwest.com.
Well, in today's livestock news, there is increasing demand for U.S. pork in the Philippines. With more on that story, here's Joe Shealy.
In this U.S. Meat Export Federation report, we speak with Dr. Dale Warner of Colorado State University, who recently conducted a workshop for meat processors in the Philippines aimed at increasing demand for U.S. pork variety meat.
This was part of a project funded originally by National Pork Board, who had received funding from USDA for the project, trying to add value to pork variety meats and raw blood from the pigs. The idea was to utilize fibrin, which is a naturally found cold binding technology, two components, fibrinogen and thrombin, coming from the pig's raw blood, that can be used together to cold bond variety meat items and shape them or form them into something that is more substantial in the way of size, something that's more usable for chefs, processors, etc. In the Philippines, we met with R&D personnel, so those that are in product development. We're able to demonstrate to them how fibrin works, demonstrate some new and innovative products to them, and then we're actually able to leave behind a little bit of the fibrin so that they could take that back to their places of business and experiment with it as well.
Warner gives a few examples of items highlighted at the workshop.
In terms of taste and eating characteristics, the pork variety meats are very similar to beef, but are smaller sized. And that smaller size oftentimes creates challenges. So tongues, pork diaphragm, the jowls are a big one because that product can be formed and shaped as bacon, a much lower cost bacon. Ears, face masks can be combined together, heart, kidney, liver. With fibrin, they all become functional with one another.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Shealy.
Thanks, Joe. And dairy producers are being reminded September 10th is just around the corner. That's the deadline to complete that survey asking about your perceptions of the National Dairy Farmers Assuring Responsible Management, or FARM program, and how it can continue to improve the resources it offers farmers. The voluntary survey is being conducted by the FARM program in conjunction with Colorado State University. It wants your knowledge of FARM and the value it provides to your operation. The results will help FARM's animal care program better provide cooperatives and farmers with the appropriate guidance and materials required of program participants. Survey questions address such topics like producers' familiarity with the program, where they seek additional FARM program information, and more. Now, individual producers can take the online version, or you can contact the FARM program to be mailed a copy, but you must do so quick because it needs to be in by September 10th. For more information, just go to nmpf.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
It's been 50 years since Cuba turned politically away from the U.S. Made a big difference? That philosophy has not changed, but the years have brought changes. Trade between the U.S. and Cuba still is a costly problem to a lot of both countries. See, Cuba has to import enough food to feed nearly 15 million people. Open trade could mean $2 billion a year for U.S. farmers. Relaxing trade restrictions began in the last couple of years of the Obama administration and continues, but it has not ended. There are feeble efforts to end the embargo on trade and travel still being talked about in Washington. It's likely to change dramatically this year. Travel is increasing slowly, but trade still has a long way to go. Well, for farmers anyway. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, AgNet West.
Specialty Crop News, brought to you by the Almond Board of California. Find them online at almonds.com. The Almond Board helps families learn about almonds and almond farming through the California Foundation for Ag in the Classroom. I talked with Almond Board Program Coordinator and Industry Relations, Rebecca Bailey, for more on the program. Tell us a little bit about why the Almond Board is involved with Ag in the Classroom.
So Almond Board has had a long-standing relationship with the California Foundation for Ag in the Classroom for about the past 5 to 10 years. Coming from California, which is such a powerhouse as it relates to agriculture, and there's so many different crops grown in this state, almonds being one of those specialty crops. We found out, early on that it's important to make sure that students roughly around that third to fifth grade age range, know where their food comes from. And almonds being, one of the number one crops in the state, we just really see a huge need for that. We know that there is kind of that, ag literacy gap that we're faced with. So really trying to connect with students at an early age to be able to teach them about where their food comes from and specifically almonds in this case.
So what type of things does Almond Board do?
So the Almond Board actually has three different resources that are aimed, again, at students from that third to fifth grade age range. The oldest resource that we have is an almond story activity book. This is one that everyone just loves. We get lots of requests to send these out. It's basically an activity book. It's super fun. It has a lot of different activities all related to almonds. It goes over the almond life cycle. It goes over pollination. It goes over careers in the ag industry, as well as almond nutrition and where almonds came from and where California almonds go all across the world. So it's really cool for students to be able to have that piece. There's different activities woven in and out. Some of them are related to math. Some of them are just coloring in a picture. Some of them are a word search or different word problems. So it really not only is a fun activity for students to do, but it's also teaching them all about almonds. So we also have an almond story video, which is complimentary to the almond story activity book. And this is really just a fun 8-minute video. It goes into everything that the activity book goes into, but it's a fun video. It's the narrative of a cartoon bee talking to another bee about almonds. And then there's also real life shots and footage out in an orchard. So you're really getting the best of both worlds. So it's very entertaining, but very educational as well. And those two pieces work hand in hand. Our most recent piece that we have is actually lesson plans that teachers can use that encompass all those previous two pieces. And basically there's five different lessons in this one unit, and those include factor opinion. There's a science and poetry with almonds. There's fun with almond math. There's almond history and cultural significance. And then there's nutritious almonds. So those are five different lessons that that encompass this almond unit. And those lessons all use the activity book as well as the video to incorporate into the classroom.
All right, and this is all through Ag in the Classroom. So if there's a teacher listening who wants to get her students or his students involved, what should they do?
Exactly. So they could either contact us at the Almond Board. We'd be happy to help you. We have information on our website, almonds.com. where you all these resources, they truly are free. They're all available online, but we do have hard copies of the activity books. So if there's a teacher out there who would like to have a class set, we're more than happy to send those to that teacher. We have the video that's available on YouTube. If you just do an Almond Story search, it will pop up. But yeah, all these resources and the lesson plans are available on California Foundation for Ag in the Classroom's website, which is learnaboutag.org. And all of these resources can be found there.
Is there anything else that you can think of, Rebecca?
It's the back to school season. It's already September, which is crazy. And so it's good for teachers and educators to get an early start on incorporating these resources into their classroom. So we're really hoping that educators throughout the state will be able to see a need for this and to know the importance of California almonds and truly have a desire to incorporate this in their classrooms.
Thanks again to Almond Board Program Coordinator and Industry Relations, Rebecca Bailey. This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm Sabrina Hill. We'll be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters? Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Ahoy there!
Hi.
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand, and that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. AgNet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle. Or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. And now more of the agriculture stories you'll want to know today. Lower commodity prices in August pushed farm economy optimism lower, that according to the Purdue CME Group Ag Economy Barometer released this week. The barometer drifted lower in August to 132 points, down 7 points from July, but still stronger than the year-ago level of 96. A reading of more than 100 indicates optimism regarding the farm economy, while a reading below indicates pessimism. Since peaking in January at a reading of 153, monthly barometer readings have ranged from a low of 124 in March to 139 in July. The current conditions index within the barometer drove the monthly decline, which dropped 22 points to 122 as commodity prices dropped lower in August. However, recent declines in commodity prices did not noticeably dampen farmer expectations regarding future economic conditions. Still, approximately 6 out of 10 respondents indicated that grain marketing opportunities over the last 6 months were likely better than opportunities that will be available in the next 6 months. Controlling bromes early in winter wheat can help growers better manage their crop in the following spring and protect winter wheat from losing vital nutrients. Michael Clements has more.
By applying a product at burn down before the winter wheat crop emerges, growers are setting up their crop for better success down the road. Chad Efforts, head of Arista Life Science Research and Development, says failure to control bromes could impact yield later.
Bromes are a little bit of a problem in that they have kind of the same life cycle as winter wheat, so they emerge in the fall right with your winter wheat. And they're very competitive and fast growing. Most people know they head out even before the winter wheat in the spring, so they take a hold early, and that early competition can really set your wheat back and definitely hurt your yields long term.
He says the key to defeating bromes in your winter wheat is having a good burn down at the beginning of the growing season.
So using that burn down with a residual type product that has activity on brome like Prepare gives you that chance to thin that brome out for the first 3 weeks or so after you seed your winter wheat, and that'll get your winter wheat up and established free of competition. And that brome's not robbing any of that moisture that the wheat needs, especially going into winter where dormancy's coming on there, and you'll have a better stand and better survivability through the winter with a good stand going into the winter.
By using a product such as Prepare by Arista Life Science early in winter wheat, growers are protecting their crop from weeds that rob nitrogen from the wheat plants. To get a good burn down of weeds for winter wheat, Efforts says the process starts with scouting your fields.
Starts with scouting your fields, knowing kind of what you got. If you've been growing winter wheat for a number of different years, you pretty much know that bromes are going to be there. So scouting the fields are number one. To get a good winter wheat crop, you always got to break that green bridge, so you do need an early burn down. And then I think managing the residual application early to manage that early emergence, whether it's winter emerging mustards, so your winter annual mustards, your brome species. And controlling those weeds early in the fall is probably the best bet. And by having that early control and burn down and then a residual product like Prepare to get rid of those weeds, including winter annuals for those first 3 weeks, is saving your fertilizer bill and protecting your wheat.
Following the early season burn down, Efforts explains what growers should do throughout the growing season to ensure a clean crop.
And it's just scouting and monitoring your field. And then you can kind of make that application when you want for broadleaf controls because you've got good residual on your early grass. And by being able to time that more for your broadleaves and not moving that application way early gives you an opportunity to have more effective broadleaf control. But also, when you apply a lot of these grass products early in the spring and you have all that variable weather pattern, you can run into some crop injury when you get low temperatures at night. And that way, burn down application, this product is probably the safer way to go, and you don't run into those tough weather conditions and trying to get an application on that might hurt your crop.
To learn more about Prepare, visit www.aristalifescience.us. Michael Clements reporting.
How much do you know about farmers markets and about farmers? In this report, Gary Crawford proves he knows very little.
Summer may be winding down, but your local farmers markets are revving up with late summer and early fall produce. We are out here at the Agriculture Department's Farmers Market in Washington talking with someone from the Farmers Market Coalition, the irrepressible May Carol. That's M-A-E.
And Carol is two R's and two L's.
Oh, you're taking more than your fair share of R's and L's. You know, there are people walking around that don't have R's and L's.
They're missing R's and L's. I have
and
double the amount that I need.
Them.
Yes.
All right. You're out here giving people a farmers market trivia quiz. Being a trivial person myself, you're going to give it to me. But I have never done well with tests, May.
You're going to do great.
All right.
So our first question is, how many farmers markets are there in the U.S.? A, more than 1,000. B, more than 5,000, or C, more than 8,000?
5,000?
We are actually at more than 8,000 farmers markets.
Never would have guessed that.
Well, the number keeps going up. Fun fact, in 1994, there were only about 1,700. So you're never going to get it right because farmers markets keep expanding and growing, and there's more ones every year.
Sneaky. All right, sneaky. Sneak me another one then. Go ahead.
Okay. So there are how many times as many farmers over the age of 65 as there are farmers under the age of 35? two times as many, three times as many, or four times as many?
Probably four, the way they age it.
You know what? We will round up. There are 3.5 times as many farmers over the age of 65 as there are farmers under the age of 35.
And that's changing also every day because...
Tricky numbers. They keep moving.
Yeah, that's... Okay, there's no way to actually know the answer because it changes every year. This is sneaky. I'll never win. One more try.
So here is a good one. What percentage of farmers who sell at roadside stands or farmers markets use organic practices to grow and raise their food?
35%.
Higher than that. 75% use organic methods.
Can I? All right, one more. Just one more chance.
What president used to shop his local Georgetown market in 1806, stocking up on beef, eggs, and fresh vegetables?
John Adams, yeah.
Thomas Jefferson.
I cannot
win. In Georgetown, so not very far from where we are right now.
No, I missed another one, or as Jefferson sings in that musical Hamilton.
What did I miss?
Well, I missed every question, but don't you miss a chance to visit your local farmer's market. Lots of good reasons to shop there.
The produce is fresher.
I know exactly where it came from, and it makes me happy to know that my family's eating that.
It's nice to know where your food comes from, and to know what you're buying is supporting local growers and families.
And to find a market near you, go online, search USDA Farmers Market Directory. USDA Farmers Market Directory, so you won't be saying,
"What did I miss?"
In Washington, Gary Crawford.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.